Google canceled I/O this week.
Yes. So, yeah. So that's the event that everybody cares about.
Lots of things got canceled. It seems like I really like this site that TC put up called Is It Canceled Yet? Or yeah, isitcanceledyet.com. And it's just a full list of all of these different festivals and tech events and stuff. And it's just really comical. But yeah, I guess humor is how we cope with tragedy, right? As human beings. But yeah, the first one on the list here is Google I/O. And you can check out our coverage over at 95google.com for that.
I/O
acted like they were still going to do it for a while. And they, as I've said many times, like it's kind of on until it's not. And it this week was the plug finally got pulled on I/O.
Yeah. Objectively, I/O is the biggest domino to drop in terms of the entire tech industry. Because I don't think Microsoft has pulled Microsoft Build. Which will be in Seattle, and it's the week after I/O. Apple hasn't announced WWDC yet to detail what's happening. But in terms of like other conferences, there's Google Cloud Next, which is in April. Google presence at the Game Developers Conference. But I/O is, in terms of our world and consumer-facing technology and announcements, that's the biggest thing to go, the in-person component of that.
Yeah, and if you don't live on Twitter like we do, you might not be following the coronavirus/COVID-19 situation as closely as we are. It's kind of one of the curses of our job is we're permanently online, and so we're getting the developments minutes, hours, days before most of the normal people in our life, I guess. That's one of the things I've been noticing is that, you know, I'm sharing updates, you know, with friends and they're like, oh, well, no one's even talked about that. You're the only person talking about this. And then a week goes by and then the thing that I talked about the previous week is, you know, now being talked about. And yeah, so I mean, for us, it was easy to see that I/O was, I mean, probably about 2 weeks ago, we were able to see that I/O was going to be pulled. As soon as those dominoes started falling, it becomes very clear that no company wants to be the company that hosts an event and facilitates the spread of a deadly disease to people that are medically vulnerable. And it looks like it's going to be the right decision because just today, the city of San Francisco announced the first two cases that are in the city. And as many people know, San Francisco is a little bit of a tinderbox for this. What's probably going to be a bit of a tinderbox for this virus for a wide variety of reasons, sanitation and cultural and otherwise. And Google itself, we've heard, is already taking this very seriously, putting up flyers and banners and things telling in the bathrooms telling people to, you know, use good hygiene. And was it the Zurich office or the
both actually.
Okay, both offices now have had measures. What's the story there?
So in Dublin, which is Google's European Union headquarters and has 8,000 employees, there is a suspected case of coronavirus. I don't think we've actually heard back from whether that is a confirmed case, but as a precaution, Google on Tuesday and I believe Wednesday, they asked all of these 8,000 employees to work from home if possible. So that is a massive, one, it's a precautionary measure, and two, it was a test of sorts for the company to see whether they could maintain full productivity when everybody's working from home and using Hangouts Chat and Hangouts Meet to just do day-to-day stuff.
Yeah, this is actually, I haven't told you this, Abner, this is a little bit of an Alphabet Scoop exclusive, but I actually I've been lurking on the coronavirus subreddit a lot this week. And
there is a subreddit for. I think we should preface that.
And it's growing exponentially, and it looks like it's growing pretty much in line with the virus spread itself. But anyways, I saw an actual Googler. I'm not going to out them because I don't want to get them in trouble. But they actually commented on one of the threads about, I believe, the Dublin office situation. And I said, hey, I'm sure you've heard of us. I run 9to5google.com, and I was wondering if you'd be willing to talk kind of like off the record about just things that are going on at the campus and just keep us in the loop. Because, you know, we have a pretty good track record of keeping people informed about what's going on internally. And I think ultimately our goal is not to incite panic, but to keep people informed, to keep people safe, especially Googlers, as much as we can. Obviously, Google's going to do a way better job than us at that. But basically, he was asking him if he could keep us in the loop. And he said, I'm trying to find it. He said, no, I'm not interested in sensationalizing a tragic event. And I said, okay, I understand. But yeah, it seems like, you know, all of these Silicon Valley mega companies are taking this seriously. And I guess a lot of these companies in the Valley specifically have the advantage of being able to take it seriously.
They have the people, they have the teams.
Yeah, and a lot of these companies are very strongly software oriented. Mm. And so it's really easy to tell people to work remotely. And that's unfortunately not going to be the case. I saw a statistic today that suggested that only 33% was the number I saw, of workers in the country are currently in a place where they could easily work from home, or their company could easily allow them to work from home. So that's not even a number of people currently working from home, because the people currently working from home are far smaller. But yeah, that's just the number of people that could theoretically work from home. You know, if you think about factory workers, or, you know, tons of highly skilled jobs, or service jobs, or manual labor jobs, it's just working from home is just not an option. And a lot of people in our country, unfortunately, are not going to get paid medical leave in the case that they do, you know, get diagnosed or come down with something, or it just for the sake of their family, for the safety of their family, have to stay home. So, I guess Google is kind of leading the way, and not only their cancellation of I/O, but just, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Google follows in Twitter's footsteps in the coming weeks and just says everyone's working from home, or at least as many people as possible are working from home if your job allows it. That would not be surprising at all for me.
Yeah. That's the corporate internal angle to speak of. But for our audience, I think seeing the headline that Google I/O is being canceled, even if it's just the in-person portion of it, it's surprising. People want to know. They're still interested in the news and what's happened, what's going to happen. This yearly event it's in its 10th edition now. So. Yeah. In terms of what's happening there, so Google on Tuesday, I believe, they sent out emails to attendees saying that we're canceling the in-person event due to coronavirus. We're refunding your tickets and all that. A nice thing they're doing is if you've successfully got a ticket this year, you'll be able to apply for IO 20. You'll be able to immediately purchase an IO 2021 ticket without having to register again, not having to do the ticket drawing. So that's a nice touch. Google's also donating $1 million to the Mountain View local organizations to help offset the 7,000 conference attendees that come every May for a good week or so, actually. So that's in terms of the logistics front. The second thing that they announce is that the exact statement is we're looking into other ways that we can host I/O. Interestingly, it's not as definite a plan compared to something like Cloud Next, which is a month earlier. So the Google Cloud's Enterprise Conference, they already said that they're going to host a 3-day online digital first event. They're going to live stream everything. They're going to have Q&A sessions. It's free to everybody. Google Cloud Next is already on the record as this is our plan. And the same thing with the game developers conference in 2 weeks, actually. Google is going to host a live stream. They're going to host all the sessions. That's basically what we know about that. So these two events, yes, they are a month and 2 months before I/O, but Google already has laid out what they're doing. Whereas with I/O, they just said they're exploring how to do I/O.
Yeah, and there's lots of, well, first of all, it's two months out, and so, you know, there's a lot that can change in 2 months, and so I think they are trying to just not commit to something before they can.
Yeah, and to add one more thing to that, they haven't actually committed to the dates,
right?
To the 12 May 12th to 14th, unlike these two other events, which is interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, I think that's partly because it's just far enough away that they don't have to commit to anything. But I think the other thing is that this situation with the virus is unfolding so quickly that I don't think that, you know, for all we know, like they might not be able to host anything at all. It could be that severe, or it could be so, you know, it could be not severe enough that, you know, remote I/O events could still be held or something along those lines. It's very uncertain at the moment. So it just seems to make sense that they would just delay that, especially since they don't have to make any announcements. I mean, the really big thing logistically for people was if you had a ticket, if you bought a ticket, you know, a lot of people probably would have been, including us, looking into booking travel and accommodations and stuff like that in the coming weeks. And I think they just wanted to, you know, pull the plug before people started doing that and, you know, refunded everyone's money before things got closer. But as for what they can do, you know, it's pretty wide open, I think. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Again, and the most likely at this point is live streams, which they are already going to do anyways. They're very good at live streaming every single session, the main keynotes, obviously. They have that entire infrastructure set up. The I/O website during the developer conference is just schedules, and here's how to find the right live stream and all that. They're very well suited to get this, to do something digital, if that's how they want to do it. If they still want to host sessions, that is.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, they clearly have the infrastructure. And so if I were to guess, I think the way this is going to play out is they're just going to hold a lot of the same kinds of events they would have held for Google I/O, and they're just going to go digital only. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that's going to play out for the hardware side of things, because Google I/O is, as you know, like it's kind of two different things now. At least it was last year. There were a couple years where it was heavily developer focused, and in years past, you know, there has been a mix between kind of consumer focus and developer focus. Last year was kind of a return to a little bit of consumer focus, which was surprising for us. And this year, there's an assumption with the kind of TikTok cycle of the Pixel 4, Pixel 4a, Pixel 3 situation, we would assume that the Pixel 4a and perhaps other Google hardware products that haven't launched or haven't been announced, including the Pixel Buds and other things, you know, might be making an appearance at I/O. And so that's off the table in the sense that it's not going to be happening in Mountain View. So the question is, you know, it's really easy for them to just host all of their little developer sessions and just live stream them all and just do an all digital event. I definitely see them doing that, but I don't know what they would do for the consumer side of things. Are they going to hold a keynote on day one of the digital, you know, virtual I/O? I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me that they would announce a phone in a digital live streamed keynote.
I
think it's more likely we'll see an announcement that's that's just similar to what they've done in the past with their hardware launches that didn't get events.
Yeah, so several things to unpack there. The sessions and conferences and keynotes, they work best if you have all your attendees, all your presenters there. But at the same time, I don't know if they want to take that risk of still bringing people in from around the world to present on one stage. So that's to your point of whether there is even a main keynote. But at the same time, I would think they would want to still offer a similar experience with all the major flashy announcements that get onto the nightly news. And I would think they would also want to include hardware into that one event just to make it this tentpole thing in terms of scale, in terms of still getting people's attention.
Yeah, I mean, certainly possible. It's all up in the air, I think. I mean, the other thing is for press, I mean, this is purely kind of inside baseball logistical thing, but yeah, with these hardware launches, all companies like to make sure that these devices are in press hands in one way or another, usually before launch, if not at launch. And I guess the question is could they hold an event, a smaller event that's press focused for the Pixel 4a and for whatever else they have up their sleeve? We don't know. It seems like a lot of things, as of today, these companies, the vast majority of major Silicon Valley companies are limiting all unnecessary travel. And I think that even a small press event would kind of fall into that category. Mm-hmm. It's hard. We're not a show for medical or epidemiology analysis, but from my perspective, it seems like it seems like over the next couple of months, things are only going to get worse. I mean, it's unfortunate and sad, and obviously our hearts go out to even the people that have already passed in Washington. There's already been 11 deaths as of now. I just don't see it getting better in the near term, and so I think it's unlikely that we'll have any travel for technology related things before the fall at the earliest. And even then, there's the concern that, like the swine flu and like other epidemics like this, there's a concern that there could be a bounce back in terms of outbreaks. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, it might, in the past, similar viruses have had an outbreak in the spring and then kind of gone dormant a little bit during the summer in the heat and then come back with a vengeance in the fall. So it might, I mean, I would not be shocked even at this point. I mean, this is maybe it's foolish to even speculate about this at this point. I don't want to stir up any rumors or concerns, but I would not be shocked to see even, you know, a made by Google hardware event or even these other major companies hold their annual, you know, hardware launch events in the fall. I wouldn't be surprised to see this virus even get in the way of those happening. So, that's my take on it. It seems like the situation is pretty grim all around.
Mm. Yeah. So that is IO. Again, still a good 2 months out for us in terms of coverage and in terms of whatever Google is going to announce. But beyond IO, which is like the conference, the internal, the corporate angle, Google has taken some steps to consumer-facing steps, really, to handle the coronavirus. I think the most notable is how, given the situation, many people are being instructed to work from home. Many students are also in light of school closures. They're being asked to work to study from home. And Google this week announced that they are making premium Hangouts Meet features free, specifically. So Hangouts Meet is their video conferencing solution. They're making features like the ability to have 250 participants in a call, live streaming to 100,000 viewers, and the ability to save calls to Google Drive so people can watch them after the fact in terms of like a lesson or something. So these features previously were paid, and you had to have a higher tier of G Suite service. But now it's all free for the students, for companies, for corporations until July 1st. So that's a good lengthy time where Google is making its premium offerings free to help people stay connected.
Yeah, it's always hard to tell with these things, though, what is genuine philanthropy and what is opportunism. Google Hangouts, especially Meet and Chat, both need a shot in the arm, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it seems convenient that this would be the thing that they highlight in the midst of this tragedy. Not to be too cynical, because it will certainly benefit people, but
there's objectively a gain for most people, but
there's also objectively a gain for Google.
For the marketing potential.
Sure.
For that whole angle. But yeah, that's one thing they did this week.
It's also going to prove beneficial, I think, for a lot of these Silicon Valley companies that are going remote, because there's going to be a lot of meetings that are going to have to be held virtually. Obviously Hangouts Meet is going to be very helpful for those that are, just regular citizens who are suffering and need ways to communicate with family and such. But also I can see it being very helpful for companies, like partnered companies that Google already works with to some degree, that are going to need a solution as remote work becomes more prevalent than it's probably ever been in the coming months.
There's a gigantic societal trend towards working from remote, working from home, that kind of stuff. So yeah, as you were saying, it adds to this.
Yeah, I mean, it's multiple trends. One trend being, I've read so many takes over the last couple of years of, people saying that the developer conference model is dated and then needs to be updated for the 20th century or the 21st century. Just this idea that limiting access to Google I/O to only people that can afford an $1,000 ticket and travel and lodging and wins a randomized lottery system, it's extremely limited. And I know that they've always offered all their content for free online anyway, but it's never really been about the conference itself has never really been about making it as available as it could be.
It's not about the, truly, it's not really about the learning, as all these conferences are all about connecting with people, about making connections, and in the case of developer conferences, being able to find the engineer that would help you answer your problem right there. I/O has sandboxes and app reviews, which developers can have an Android engineer look through your app and advise the stuff. It's those kinds of things which are valuable and objectively does not scale well to making it available for everybody. So
they could find ways to scale it.
As I said earlier, CrowdNext is having Q&A sessions with Google Teams.
Exactly.
That will be available online, and that is going to be a wide availability.
Yeah, and then the other trend, the remote working thing that you just mentioned, is it's always been a conversation that, I think studies have already shown that most remote workers are happier than people that are stuck in an office. In general, with their jobs, I think a lot of the data has suggested that it's a direction that the industry should move anyway. In so many ways, obviously, there's pros and cons to everything, but I think we're going to see an unintended beta test, so to speak, happen in tech for the next, I don't know, who knows how long. In other coronavirus news, it looks like Google is also, having to change the ways in which coronavirus appears on its services. For example, Google Play is hiding all search results for coronavirus related apps. Is that still the case as of today?
I will check this very minute, because when you search for coronavirus or COVID-19 on the Play Store, Google will just say no results found. And that is still the case today. Google has been actually a bit mum about why they're doing this, but one can speculate that it's due to Google. Okay, so right now there are a lot of like tracker apps, news apps, map, coronavirus maps that show where patients' symptoms are. There's a lot of those, dozens and dozens, and they have like hundreds of reviews, thousands of reviews, and arguably, it's important to make sure to get that news from something more verified to know that those apps are being kept up strenuously, to that that it's actually all up to date. And so by the looks of it, Google is instead pushing people to a list of apps like the CDC. There's a news application, and this is happening around the world, where they're just offering a list of apps that provide more direct resources. So I think that's something for the better in terms of the curation, of having editorial curation on these apps.
Yeah, and I think anytime there's a worldwide event like this, there's room for opportunists to take advantage of it for malicious purposes. And just looking at the App Store right now, it looks like the top two apps for coronavirus searches are brand new apps from unknown companies with less than 15 ratings on each. I guess it's really easy to take advantage of an event like this maybe not for the best gain of the informing the public.
Yeah.
So I think it's smart for Google to just play it conservative on.
And this is not to say that those app developers have the right intentions in mind, that they're well-meaning. I saw one of the apps is in Chinese, I believe, so it speaks to a certain population. But at the same time, you rather go with with the name brand, so to speak.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've seen this at all, but it seems like this is definitely happening on Google's AdWords platform at the moment. I've noticed an incredible surge of face mask ads across all of my web browsing. Uh-huh. This is just a suggestion, but maybe the AdWords team should look into that. And, or I guess, is it even called AdWords anymore? The Google Ads team should look into that and maybe see if people are manipulating that situation too. Although Google Ads is definitely far less regulated than a lot of Google's other services. Anyways, what about this DeepMind thing? Did you see this?
Yes, I just this afternoon Sundar tweeted about this. So DeepMind is Alphabet's. They purchased this UK-based machine learning artificial intelligence researcher app, and they are widely regarded as being at the forefront of this kind of stuff. Most people know them from AlphaGo and AlphaStar, AIs that can beat the best Go and StarCraft 2 players, respectively. So they also, medical and medicine and that kind of stuff is also an area of interest to them, to see how they can apply AI to that. And one thing they're doing, they have this deep learning system known as AlphaFold, which tries to predict the structures of proteins. And predicting this kind of stuff is an important step towards being able to identify viruses and eventually making a vaccine. So what DeepMind did today is they shared some of their research on the COVID-19 virus, the virus behind it. And they shared some looks into the structure of this virus. And this is very early stuff, and they caution that it's highly experimental, that it, and it's all been just simulated online using the systems. But the goal is to help other researchers get a better understanding of how COVID-19 works, in hopes of hastening research into a vaccine. So this is Google's research and development lab, just Alphabet's research and development lab, just doing something for the greater good. But of course, yeah, other ways.
We're not biologists, so
an
understanding of really what the significance of sharing the structure of, or structure predictions for the 6 proteins associated with the virus.
Yeah.
We don't really have any really valuable analysis on what that means, but.
Yeah. And their blog post today was, they're the first to admit that as well, that they're not focusing on what everybody else is focusing right now. They're just focusing on around what everybody else is doing, in hopes of contributing something useful. But again, this is early days for having AI, deep learning, solve this kind of pressing needs in society.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's kind of highlighting, you know, a conversation that's been going on for years about how big tech tries to step into every problem and find a way to hack it away. As we've seen with lots of sociological problems, especially in the Bay Area, it's not exactly possible to hackathon your way through some deep-seated, you know, problems. And as we're seeing with the virus, this is just not another case where it's, you know, tech trying to step in and saying, maybe we can solve this problem. I know that, for example, at South by Southwest, there was going to be the Capital Factory, which is kind of an incubator there in the Austin area. They're holding an event called Hack the Coronavirus.
Oh, that's fast.
During South by.
No, that happened quickly.
It's a little bit cringy because it's like, you know, what are a bunch of software programmers in a room really going to be able to do to help the coronavirus situation in Austin? Probably not much, but you know, I'm a fan of the optimism. I'm a fan of the dreaming. But
yeah, ideas come from everywhere, obviously.
Sure,
the basis of ideas usually.
Sure. On the other hand, it's really interesting to you know, kind of imagine the ways in which technology is already trying to, or already kind of succeeding in solving the coronavirus problem. And I know that this might not ever happen in the United States, but is it WeChat in China, that like China's basically using a barcode system to kind of control the flow of
to know what your risk of COVID-19 is.
Yeah.
And that's,
and then basically like there's different degrees of, like,
it's color code. It's literally color coded.
Yeah. And it's like, we don't really know. I mean, they've got to be basing that on a huge pool of data that no one else has access to, but it basically is like telling people like whether or not they should leave the house based on their risk of exposure, basically. Is that?
Yeah, basically. Or whether they're allowed to, frankly.
Okay. Interesting. And it seems like these kind of authoritarian type measures, which are strictly controlling people movement, which we'll probably never see happen here in the States unless the situation gets extremely dire and war powers are enacted or something. You know, it seems like they're actually working. That's kind of the interesting thing, is that in this case, the you know, social distancing, which is based on hordes of data that, you know, the government has to control the situation, it seems to be working.
We don't
really know, because it's hard to know what the numbers actually are versus what's being reported, but it looks like the spread in China has slowed to a halt over the last 3-4 weeks. Hard to know. One of our listeners actually says, back to the DeepMind conversation, Austin Murphy says, I'm a biochemist. Basically, structure is function, and this gives us a huge leap at possible ways to tag the virus. We work with DeepMind at JHU on the folding protein project. Not exactly sure what that means either. So even the translation of the translation is not really helping us out much. But
yeah, basically,
I appreciate your sharing that. Also,
definitely structure. Just the structure we gives scientists a way to find out how the virus works, and therefore what's the best way to combat said viruses with vaccines and medication and stuff. High level, please correct me if I'm wrong. But yeah, that is the intention.
I guess that's it for coronavirus stuff. It looks like a couple of other minor things.
I guess we're more able to talk about this. Okay, so now that IO is in flux, and we assume there's going to be a hardware event, is such an event coming before the May 12th or 14th launch date, or earlier? Like, if IO isn't happening in the same tenure, in the same scale, would Google launch something sooner or later in terms of the Pixel 4a and the Pixel Buds, I guess, specifically?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not optimistic that anything's... I mean, I think this is actually connecting to a little bit of what I was just about to talk about, which is that I think we're going to see... hardware shipments and supply chains strained to the point that I think we might see delayed launches of devices and maybe even canceled launches of some devices. Hmm. I mean, that seems inevitable. I mean, Apple is already projecting that it's not going to meet revenue projections for the current quarter. I saw a rumor that shipments could be down as much as 25% this quarter for iPhones. I think I'm not optimistic about anything really when it comes to
That's
hardware
fair.
Launches. I'm not predicting the Pixel 4a will be canceled right now, but I really think that it's such a constantly evolving situation that anything could happen. If I were to guess as of today, I would guess that the Pixel 4a is going to get a muted launch, unfortunately, in the form of a press release. And I would guess that I think volumes for hardware shipments across the board are going to suffer this year.
Yeah, I guess. Months, yeah. But. And another thing to factor is people's appetite to buy major purchases in during such a climate, we're obviously not there yet, but when do people become hesitant to go to stores, for example, or that kind of stuff? But yeah, is there a willingness to purchase, frankly, non-essential things during an emergency?
Yeah, that's the kind of the macro level question. And yeah, the micro level question is, how does this affect the Pixel line specifically? As we know with the Pixel 4, well, Pixel 3's shipments dropped year over year versus the Pixel 2, and Pixel 4 shipments dropped year over year versus the Pixel 3. So the Pixel is in a multi-year decline at this point in terms of volume. The Pixel 3a was kind of the bright spot. Pixel 4a is kind of a hopeful bright spot, but it seems that this whole situation might put a damper on that. But it's not going to be because of the Pixel 4a. It's not going to be the Pixel's fault. It just seems like it might just be a perfect storm of unfortunate situations that this might, you know, it might really harm the future of the Pixel line as a whole, because they might have been hoping that the Pixel 4a would be a clear win, especially following last year's clear win with 3a.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just my speculation.
And I have to say, I just brought this up to say that I kind of want the Pixel Buds sooner than May now. So we've been waiting for it. Everybody's this week, yesterday specifically, we saw the Pixel Buds get a wireless charging certification, Qi wireless charging certification. So that's an increasing sign that stuff is happening. I think a few weeks earlier, we saw an early pre-order listing. So the wide assumption right now is that it's going to get an announcement alongside the Pixel 4a. Like last year, have two products at I.O., and of course, everything has changed, so it's unclear how anything's happening right now.
Yeah, to further highlight this, Samsung apparently has had awful sales of the Galaxy S20, and that's, like, I think that to keep this in perspective, Samsung's reporting dismal sales for the Galaxy S20 line. I mean, that's probably partly due to the pricing situation. And that's, I think we're reaching a tolerance level or tolerance maximum in smartphone space in general, that people are kind of struggling to pay $1,000 for a phone. But I think the bigger story is, I think that this whole uncertainty, all this virus stuff is probably putting a damper on the situation too. And yeah, if Samsung's struggling to sell phones even before it gets bad here in the States, that's not a very optimistic sign. I think we're really just at the tip of the iceberg in terms of the impact we're going to see here in the United States. I think the next 2 weeks are going to be pretty pivotal for how this is going to go, and specifically in Seattle. In the next week or two, I think we'll have after that we'll have a pretty good idea of how well we're going to be able to contain this outbreak in the major cities. And to use South Korea as an example, it's not exactly looking good, because South Korea should, in theory, have been as able as we would be, in my opinion, to contain things. So, yeah, I think that's pretty much all we have to say on the coronavirus situation. We'll probably have an update next week. Hopefully good news.
Yeah. Hopefully good.
In the meantime, pretty much everything in the Google world is on pause for now.
Yeah.
But we're gonna keep talking about the fact that it's on pause, so it doesn't seem like news is going to slow down much.
And fortunately, there was other news, I would say slightly more positive news this week, with the second Pixel feature drop. Just to touch on everything quickly, Google is sticking with the 3 month cadence after announcing their first feature drop in December, about adding more features to their Pixel devices, making things more helpful, which is the tagline. So for the second one, they announced some features we've been waiting for and expecting with Android 10, like cards and passes, which basically lets you hold down on the power button to see all your stored Google Pay cards for fast switching. Motion sense, the solely powered radar has a new gesture. You can like tap virtually in the air above your phone to play and pause music, which, I don't know, I'm somewhat coming around to motion sense, actually. I do have like a use case every single day, for it. So it's not like mission critical or anything, but it's useful and it's vaguely fun and gadgety to use. So that play pause thing is coming. Another thing is a whole slew of bug fixes. This release, one of the more useful ones is this ability to now playing will no longer show your songs that you're directly responsible for casting to your local Google Home Nest devices. So that's a big added convenience. Diving back into Google Pay, actually, there's this very cool feature that they're going to start rolling out this month, which lets you screenshot boarding passes, and a Google Pay will recognize it, and it'll automatically appear in the Google Pay app. So this is like a really neat, I guess I'd assume, optical character recognition feature that just recognizes and organizes your passes. So looks to be pixel only for now, but it's like one of those handy things that Google can do by knowing everything.
Yeah, lots of new features this week. My personal favorite is the clone of 3D Touch,
which I still don't get. I've read all the literature. I've read Dieter Bohn's At the Verge deep dive on this, and for the life of me, I cannot notice a difference in terms between long pressing and I'd colloquially call it deep pressing, I guess. So why is this a feature?
Do you remember was it the Android
9 Easter egg?
Okay, so I'm right.
The drawing app, yes.
Yes, this is directly related to the... What, I don't think that recognized pressure though, did it? But it was the first test of this the functionality, right? Because it's not actually recognizing pressure. It's recognizing, it's estimating pressure based on the surface area that your thumb is taking up on the screen, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
an approximation. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in practice, it works without any additional hardware.
Right. And I found the drawing app pretty fluky, or I guess just not like, I wasn't able to really get a hang of it. And this new feature, it's subtle, but I think it is noticeable.
I would appreciate it more in a drawing app. I don't know. I'm not seeing this right now. Let's put it that way. And objectively, like Apple has moved so far back away from 3D touch, force touch. I forgot which is which.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know
technology. I'll give them that.
I don't know what the potential is with it. I don't know if there is actual room for, machine learning models or something, to get it to the point where it is virtually indistinguishable from actually having the 3D touch hardware. Because I always had the suspicion that Apple ditching the 3D touch hardware was not as much as not as much them ditching the idea that those interaction ideas were bad, but that they realized that the hardware was eventually not going to be necessary to do them. And in the meantime, it's just a long press. But I think in the long term, I think that Google's demonstrating that a lot of those same ideas are going to be replicatable with software. And I think we'll see Apple mimic that. So
yeah, sure. I see that, but I just think it's an added level of complexity. Okay, right now it's indistinguishable from a long press, so that's a good thing. But having two very similar gestures in terms of what Apple tried to do was bad. It wasn't.
Oh yeah, that was the benefit of what Apple did was that having a force press versus a long press did different things.
Yes,
and so it actually had a purpose. For instance, on the home screen, if you did a hard press, it would pop up, I don't even know what it's called, the just quick actions menu or whatever. But if you did a long press without any pressure, then it would just, you know, put you into the home screen edit mode and allow you to delete apps and stuff. And so each interaction had, you know, they were distinguished very clearly that they had different purposes and different use cases. In this case, on the Android side of things, it's literally the exact same thing, because Google's not going to build out entirely new
paradigms,
right? So yeah, I mean, in that
it's sense, faster, it's less like the actual thing, it's slightly faster if you notice it. So it's like one of those background conveniences, I guess, but at the same time, don't see it quite yet.
Well, that's my my favorite feature. I just like little UX experiments like that. So
absolutely.
Yeah. I think we pretty much covered all the big stuff in the Pixel feature drop. Has feature drop been? Do we think that this branding, this marketing angle is going to stick around? Is this just the second one or the third one?
This is just the second one, and it's
first one was in November,
December. December. And it's so many of these features, like the motion sense stuff, first emerged during the Android 11 preview, and other features like pinning, being able to pin apps in the share menu, they were all first on Android 11. So it's from that kind of view, it's interesting for Google to be able to make these more significant changes in 3-month intervals. So that is a plus for Google holding stuff every 3 months. But like other features like cards and passes, clearly it was done months ago, and for some reason they only now decided to consolidate it and launch it this March.
Yeah, I had a long-standing theory that was connected to the imminent launch of a Google credit card, and that didn't happen.
Google card.
Yeah, I for those that don't know, I was told about that before the fall event, that Google is actively exploring doing a credit card competitor to the Apple card.
Make it out of glass. That's just me.
That'd be what
I know, right? Glass. Ultra thin glass one.
Sounds kind of dangerous though. What if it like broke in your, I mean, a lot of people put their credit cards in their wallet in their back pocket.
Yeah. I know. It's just a cool material. I'll take plexiglass, but no, I would not take plexiglass.
In other stories, it looks like the Pixel Slate is getting a price cut, which is entirely unsurprising.
And it should have happened sooner. So these are pretty drastic cuts on the i5 and i7 models specifically. So over the weekend, very quietly, Google looks to have cut the prices. So the base M3, 8 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of storage, is now $499. That's $300 off. But the more significant price reduction is the i5 at $599. That's down from $999, so a pretty substantial $400 cut. And the i7, previously $1,599, is now only $899. And with all these, any of these variants, you get a free keyboard of your choice and a useless Pixelbook pen, but it's Brew, Midnight Brew, so that's something there. But I don't know, and I would probably advise people, if they want to buy a Pixel Slate, to go for the middle one, $599. It's a pretty good value, actually.
Yeah, it really is. It's not a bad Chromebook. I mean, I have one on the shelf.
Yeah,
it stays on the shelf a lot, but
it's
a good deal, I think.
It's more than a tablet now, and which is a real upside.
Yeah, and pick up a... pick up the, what's it called?
Bridge keyboard.
Yeah, the bridge keyboard. Pick up the bridge keyboard on like eBay or something.
You get it for free.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's even better.
It's a steal. It's a full computer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's no-brainer.
How much more can it go? So yeah,
They definitely had tons of stock and they just couldn't push this thing. Like, this thing was amazing. It's probably the biggest failure since the Nexus 9.
Ooh.
It had to have been. There's no way they can drop the price in half. And I bet they're still struggling to sell the thing.
Yeah, probably. The Nexus. Are Google's tablets doomed by horrible cover accessories? Do you remember the origami case for the Nexus 9?
No, I don't.
It was actually literally just a cover that you could like magnetically attaches, and you could like fold it into a stand or something. I totally forgot, but it was pretty bad.
Yeah. And Google's tablets efforts are forever doomed because they have no way to coerce developers into building tablet apps.
Yes.
Because Apple has a monopoly on that entire market.
Yeah. And so, the best chance is the web and responsive design, but mostly it's still kind of bad.
The web is not very touch friendly.
In
many cases. Anyways, we're digressing a bit. Let's cut the show there.
Yes.
You can tune in Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast weekly, and you'll be able to find it on all your favorite podcasting platforms within a day or so. And those include iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and also over directly at 95google.com. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope, again, our hearts go out to anyone that's dealing with the coronavirus in whatever way, and we really hope that next week we'll be back with some good news, and hopefully, you know, we'll be able to report that the situation, especially for those Google employees that are affected, is going to get better. Thanks for tuning in, as always, and thanks to Ivor for joining me, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Later.